Hiermit möchte ich sehr gerne zu unserem allerersten wirklichen Schwerpunkt unserer Konferenz überleiten. A warm welcome once again to you, Manuel. Yes, please come to us. Manuel and me, I think we know each other since some years. We met each other in the network called CESER, a network of technical universities. And just a few words to your very impressive CV. First of all, Manuel is professor in Portugal at the Technical University of Portugal, and for many, many years, except for 7 years, he has been minister for science. And now he is very involved in EU agenda, and I think you're the perfect person to tell us about all the news about science Europe, researchers, and in connects to EU. So, Manuel, the stage is yours, and thanks once again for coming and joining our conference.
Thank you very much, Anna and Carolina. Let me thank you, certainly, Anna, which who invited me to be here about 1 year ago, but also let me thank you, all of you, for attending this event. I will try to speak not more than half an hour and to convince you that we are facing an European issue. An European issue which is a new issue and needs to be understood within a broad context of certainly science and higher education policy, but also in general a key issue within European identity. About essentially 1 year and a half ago, we have published together with Initiative for Science in Europe a manifesto for early career researchers. The manifesto was essentially a process to engage stakeholders, the youngsters, associations, youngsters associations, including the Marie Curie Alumni Association, and I see Mustafa over there, but many other, essentially in order to better understand how can we attract researchers and young people to doing and to understand what will be a true European career on research. And the big, say, white elephant on the table is always the current migratory flows of young researchers to other places, particularly across the Atlantic and to the United States. Particularly that 20 years ago was a problem of some countries of the European peripheries, but now it has become, over the last years, an issue which is affecting large European countries such as France and Italy. If you go to many of the leading American universities, you find much more European researchers than 20 years ago. So, reflecting in this issue, how can we guarantee that within European identity we frame also a context for research careers? And by career, as already Caroline has mentioned, we have to try to mean that we look at the way researchers are recruited, assessed, rewarded, and essentially which employment conditions they are facing. And I will report to you several times during this talk the question of good research jobs, the quality of research jobs, which has become not an issue exclusive of science or academia. It has become and will become, and I will end with that, a clear issue in modern societies for what has been called by some researchers a modern industrial policy. But it does not lose its identity in the research and academic community. This manifesto has been throughout the media in several organizations, either in Business Europe, in Research Professional. Nature has published a report which essentially identifies the way we need to look at it in a modern way. A modern way, why? If probably some of you may remember, about 10 years ago in London, Nicole Kidman presented an interesting piece of theater, essentially based on the history of Rosalind Franklin, which was a young woman that made all the work in the discovery of DNA, and her name never appeared. These were typical stories, particularly affecting young women researchers throughout the world. But today, although this type of situation still exists, we understand that the situation is broader, is larger, and affects not only women, but young researchers in general. And in many parts of Europe, it is particularly associated with the precarity of research jobs for young people. So why is this? And up to which point can we in Europe attract an identity of a good research quality job? Essentially, this is very much associated with the overall governance of doctoral training and research careers, but essentially I will try to focus in the way we can better attract young researchers for future generations. And this is a process. It will never change overnight, as we know in many other situations which are particularly related with the academic situation. So my main objective to be here is to foster a collective action to better understand this issue as a policy issue within the current European framework. And we know that young researchers has been critical. Many of you do know the unique process associated with the creation and the production of vaccines in COVID by young researchers in this country and in Germany. But also, if we look at basic science, the discoveries of the universe, there are new questions in the scientific field which are attracting researchers. For instance, the discovery of the carbon cycle is an unknown process which more and more attracts young people for doing research in modern ways. So I will argue that with the progress of science, we are facing a number of new opportunities which actually have been able to attract young generations. The point is that how far can we also provide better researcher careers for these young generations? And this is a political issue. This is not strict an academic issue. This question, photograph was taken a few months ago in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, very close to one of the leading Brazilian universities. And if we look at the last human development reports, we live in times of uncertainty where the labor force is particularly shaping the future, but it depends a lot in national context. And 2 weeks ago, the United Nations Development Programme published a new human development report, essentially asking for cooperation among researchers along the world. But to have cooperation, we need to have good careers, particularly in an European context. So I will say that beyond the specific nature of academic and scientific institutions, we live and we need to understand this issue in a broader labor process, which is full of uncertainties and particularly very much associated with an uneven development progress. And Europe is in a leading position. Nevertheless, in Europe, we have a quite diversified situation. And essentially, there are many other pressures which are destabilizing our planet, particularly through climate change, which is one of the topics that is more attractive of young generations, but also a number of social transformations in different parts of the world. And we know in Europe as well, but also in the United States, that this process has been associated to a political polarization which will affect all the labor force, including those doing science and academic careers. It is interesting that about 6 months ago, the group of experts on the economic and social impact of research at the European level, which has some Austrian researchers, just published a new report on the transformation in the policy in the crisis. And essentially, they argue for the need to better understand a human-centered green transition, which will depend critically on the coherence achieved through a research and innovation policy. And my argument is that in order that we build throughout Europe a coherent research and innovation policy, we need to look carefully at research careers. Because if we don't look at research careers for the youngsters, we will not be able to essentially have a coherent research and innovation policy. But we need to frame this in an historical context. And we should be proud, very proud, of the work we have done in Europe. 20 years ago, some of you may remember, Commissioner Philippe Busquin set up an high-level committee because by that time, in the early 2020s, the key issue was Europe was not training enough scientists. A new report, exactly 20 years ago, in 2004, was put together by a team of people, and essentially they were arguing the need by that time for Europe to increase at least 700,000 researchers in 10 years. It is interesting that 20 years ago, their report reported what is still today a reality. The underfunded context of many universities, the need for universities to provide a wide set of skills, and by that time they already introduced the context of the process of research careers in Europe. So some of these processes were already identified 20 years ago. But things have changed, and we should be proud again as Europeans. When we look at 20 years ago, this is the last data published by the OECD, 20 years ago we were essentially here. For instance, Austrian has by that time roughly six researchers per 1,000 active inhabitants. Austria, you doubled the number of researchers. And Europe, in general, has doubled the number of researchers. So in some way, we should be proud because we have been able, in Europe, to attract youngsters for doing research. Sweden is the country with the highest concentration of researchers, about essentially 16 researchers per 1,000 active inhabitants. Even countries like mine, a medium-sized country with 10 million inhabitants like Austria, has now one of the highest concentration of researchers, and Germany has also high concentration, above 11 researchers per 1,000 inhabitants. We know that the situation in Europe is quite diversified, with Romania still with one of the lowest concentration, about 2 researchers per 1,000 inhabitants. But in average, we have been doing very well when we look exclusively at numbers. And this is my question. We need to be careful with these numbers, and I will argue that in a minute. But we should also understand that because of that report I mentioned to you 20 years ago, this process of growing the number of researchers has been associated with a number of very important movements in Europe. The very first one was the creation in 2007, after 7 years of advocacy at an European level, of the European Research Council, which completely shaped science policy in Europe. It started that advocacy process in the year 2000. The ERC was created in 2007, as you know, and over the last, say, 10 years, more than 7,000 researchers has benefited from the European Research Council, which has created a completely new environment for fundamental research in Europe. But it has not touched on the issue of careers, because careers are essentially, as we will see, a national issue, and therefore the ERC has approached the need to foster fundamental research with grants which go up to 5 years. And it leaves to the institutions, and to the nations the question of careers. Actually, I really like to raise that although we speak about fundamental research, the very last European Innovation Council impact report has also shown new data that should us very proud in Europe, because we know that the most active startups, which has been funded through the EIC, have a background from the European Research Council and were based in fundamental research. So we know today also in Europe, and this is a new fact, that fundamental research is good per se for science, but it has also been able to foster new disruptive innovation through the role of startups creating essentially new markets. So therefore, we must definitely argue that we need, following the Nobel laureate Ben Feringa, we need excellent science, because it also means excellent innovation. And this linkage between fundamental research and disruptive innovation, now we have the evidence in Europe that it is possible to happen. I told you that under this process over the last 20 years, the ERC has probably one of the most important political actions at European level. The second one was the strengthening of the Marie Curie, Marie Skłodowska-Curie actions, which have affected and have attracted very much top young researchers for research. The numbers are various. The last assessment report was published a few months ago. I don't want to go into the details. The report clearly shows that those that have been able to have a Marie Curie fellowship have improved their careers and have been able to have a better career, although there are still a number of criticism. But we know that Marie Curie has become a small program. Currently in Horizon Europe, it has an overall budget of about 6 billion. The European Research Council has also a small budget of about 16 billion. And we know that the number of high-quality proposals which have not been funded either through the ERC or through the Marie Curie has become very high, and more than the double of those being funded. But I will say that these two instruments, the Marie Curie, which has started in the late 90s, and then the European Research Council started in 2007, has really shaped science policy and have fostered very much new research and new advanced research in Europe. But I will argue that we are still missing an instrument to better understand high quality research careers, because these two instruments were touching different either young researchers for doctoral and postdoctoral issues or the performance of fundamental research by individual top researchers, but they have not touched in the career issue. Actually, if we go back to the data I presented before, and Carolina has already presented this data, again, we should be very proud because Europe in general has, together with these two European instruments and many other national instruments, have been able to raise the number of researchers to 2 million researchers, represented 1% of the labor force. Again, as Carolina mentioned, about 60% of these researchers are in the business sector and 30% in the academic sector. The argument, though, is that the quality of the research jobs has not changed or increased at the same pace as the number of researchers. And we need to understand this, that we should be proud by the increase of the number of researchers and the capacity we have shown in Europe to attract youngsters to doing research. But at the same time, have an open-minded process and understand that there are still other reasons, and that is the reason why we still are losing talent, particularly to the United States, and particularly these days from large countries, as I mentioned, France and Italy, with a large brain drain to the United States. But this is a difficult and a complex process, which needs to be understood at a national and a quite diversified situation in Europe. And I'm very proud to be here in Austria, a country with one of the highest concentration of researchers, but also one of the highest concentration of resources in research. As you know, there are only four European member states which have achieved the target of the 3% GDP, 3% of the GDP invested in R&D. But we need to, again, be very careful with these numbers. If we try to plot over the last 25 years the evolution of the R&D expenditure per GDP, the target of the 3% is here, with only Austria, Belgium, these days, Germany and Sweden got to the 3%. We have a very large diversity of situations in Europe. And if we plot this in a way which is not very common against the intensity of research, the expenditure per researcher, so here is the volume, say the R&D in function of the GDP, here is the expenditure per researcher. We certainly understand Austria has moved in the last 25 years, is one of the most respectable evolution in Europe, and that is the reason I'm so proud to be here. But we need to understand that the situation in Europe is very much diversified. Actually, what we saw is that the four countries that got the 3% are those also with the highest funding per researcher, essentially above $220,000 per year per researcher, which is Austria, Germany, Sweden, and Belgium these days. So here you see the values, essentially above $200,000 per researcher per year. We have countries, including my own country, which has evolved but still has a much lower values, and including also Poland and Greece and Ireland, which are essentially below 80,000 euros, below 80,000 euros per researcher per year. And then we have a another group of countries, including the Netherlands, France, which has decreased to 30%. France, I repeat, has decreased by 30% the funding per researcher in the last 20 years. Italy, which has increased the overall expenditure still at very low levels, but has decreased the expenditure per researchers. We have Spain here, Czech Republic, and Denmark is between these two groups. So I will argue that in order to tackle this at an European identity issue, we need to understand the large diversity of situations in Europe. And why is this? Because although the variables which control these two issues, the volume of expenditure and the intensity of expenditure, they may depend on European funding sources, but they are essentially depending on national issues, on labor policy and fiscal policy. So we need to be very careful to tackle this at an European level. The other situation is that when we compare to the United States, the average European value of about 160,000 euros is less than half the value of 400,000 euros in the United States. And we need to understand that this issue is the main cause of the brain drain, particularly from countries like France and Italy to the United States. And again, this has become an European issue. A few clarifying remarks. When you look at volume, we know that it depends essentially on the obstacles imposed by national treasury in terms of the investment in the levels of public investment and the obstacles we have today in Europe in increasing those levels in terms of the national debt of each country. And certainly, we also depend on the industry capacity to invest R&D. But the key issue is that when we look at the intensity of the funding per researcher, it depends essentially on three variables which are controlled very much at national level. The structure of salaries, and that is the reason why this is so different across Europe. The career development, which is an issue inside the institutions, and some institutions in a few points of Europe have started to promote inverted pyramids in order to allow all the best young people to get a top professorship career, although those are very minor issues. And last but not least, the technical support to researchers, because the intensity, when we divide the overall funding per the number of researchers, we are also considering the number of people that support each research. And this varies across Europe very, very much. Here in Austria, like in Germany, we have roughly 60% of technical support compared with the number of researchers. In the United States, is 1-to-1. So one technical support and project managers for each researcher is about 60%. But in other countries, particularly in southern European countries, we have, and in countries like Romania and Bulgaria, we have essentially one technician or one project manager for five researchers. So the level and the type of careers beyond research are very critical to understand this overall issue. So the key issue, and I would like to conclude now with a number of reflections to really considering career as essentially the way researchers are assessed, rewarded, and essentially provide good employment conditions. What do you need to know? Which path for political action at an European level, with our ultimate goal is to decrease the migratory flow of European researchers to the other parts of the globe, particularly across the Atlantic. And we need to understand the founding fathers of this process, because we don't know enough about careers, because all our statistical approach, the one used by the OECD and essentially the Eurostat, was designed in the 60s and essentially in the Frascati, in the north of Italy, with people like Chris Freeman and others. And we should be, again, very proud to these founding fathers that essentially put human resources in this context. And the evolution of this process has been quite significant, but have not looked yet at the career issues. The Frascati manual, first produced in 1993, has had several adaptations, but it does not touch yet in the career issues. And then the adaptation of the Frascati manual to the Oslo manual in terms of innovation does not touch the career issue yet. That is the reason I will argue that in order to understand this process, we need more data and we need more surveys, because the existing statistical data does not touch on this issue. And essentially, to my knowledge, the best report and the best data which has been produced as about 10 years ago by Science Europe together with the Eurodoc, which they looked at about 109 funding schemes, and essentially they provide the evidence that the volume of funding is essentially short in terms of project funding, and the duration of the projects in Europe are essentially between 2 and 4 years. And essentially their main conclusion is that there is an acceptable coupling between project funding and contractual schemes, and this has resulted in many parts of Europe on precarity of research jobs for the youngsters, because they have been contracted through projects which are very short and very different from the endowed universities in the United States. To my knowledge, this report has become old. It has more than 10 years old, but is still the best that we have to understand. That is the reason why we have launched several initiatives in Europe. In May 2001, the European conclusions under the Portuguese presidency on research careers, and since then, a number of issues, including the manifesto, and essentially arguing for two main issues: the implementation of revised assessment procedures in order that we start considering in Europe the quality of the research jobs in parallel with the quality and the impact of the research results. And this is a breakthrough in research assessment, and again, this is one of the topics of this meeting, but also the need for Europe to have a new instrument to foster or to co-fund research careers, at least an instrument which goes beyond the short-term collaborative projects, which is the process that is most affecting the precarity of research issues. Essentially, within the European context, we have been arguing about five main issues: the need of an adequate careers observatory, because the data we don't have is not enough. Essentially, the employment frameworks, which are a national issue, but again, the overall funding level, and at the institutional level, the need to better balance temporary and non-temporary contracts, apart from the overall need to launch an European institutional context for a new program under this context. It is also because of this that within the CESAR network that University of Technology belongs, and I also the Stuttgart University as well, we have launched and currently just initiating a new survey. And again, I invite all of you to participate in this survey. It is not closed to CESAR members, but it has been promoted through CESAR, the CESAR network members, what we'll call CESAR Researchers Career Survey 2024, so that by the end of the year, we have also a survey identifying best practices in Europe, because we know probably at the department level or at the institute level within large universities, there are a number of good practices, and I believe we need to go inside the institutions and asking the human resources directors to provide examples of good practices so that we can inform the debate at an European level for the best practices in Europe, again, making use of those towards two goals, the potential revision of the research assessment methodologies in the context of QARA, but to include the idea of the quality of the research jobs, and essentially the need in Europe for core funding instruments to help institutions have a longer term strategy in employing young researchers. Actually, we have been arguing this within the European Commission. Currently, as you know, there has been an amendment to the Horizon Europe program for the next two years, and the idea that we could use this for experimentation of new schemes towards the next framework program. Just my very last slide is to let you know again, this is an important issue in my view for research and academic institutions, is an important issue within the overall identity of European science, but it is broader than that. Actually, the group, the ASIR group, the experts on the economic and social impact of research, has just published a vision for what they call in Europe Industry 5.0, and essentially they bring the idea of good jobs in overall industrial and research in context, and therefore I would like to bring to you, this is a serious issue in political and policy issues, not only for research and academia, but this cannot distract our attention of the specific measures within the context. Actually, in the United States, Dan Roderick for Harvard has just published a similar context, and actually he argues that climate change is the biggest threat of our ecological environment, while labor market shocks are the biggest threat of our social and political environment. And based on this, Andrea Renda at the Center for Economic Policy Studies has just published also a paper exactly on the quality of jobs and research jobs for the future of Europe, and I will argue that without this context, we will have a non-coherent innovation and research policy. So let me finish with Beethoven and the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven to really understand that we need to have a coherent policy, and that depends on the way we look at research careers. Thank you.